Again, a very warm welcome and good morning to all. We are very glad to host this talk, this time in English, as we've said. And with an international guest, we're very happy to have Mustafa Sharif here, who is an urban planner working at EFRI in Stockholm. Hello, Mustafa.
Hello, and good morning. Thanks for the invitation.
And for those who don't know these two faces, like this is Klaus Filopischov and myself is, I'm Lida Moldovan. We are both working for Message.
Yes.
And specialized on communication, city advertisement. We are doing tons of projects. One of them we are going also to present here.
So the reason we're having this talk actually is because Lida and I, we had a chance to go to Sweden this summer. And the reason we went was a conference called PlaceX Nordics. Some of you might still know it as Nordic Place Branding Conference. We from Message, we've been going a couple of years now.
Yeah, pretty regularly.
It's always a very exciting event, very great community of people and a good opportunity to talk very openly also about challenges that we face. It's a place where placemakers, place marketing people, place branding people all come together, place development people.
And share ideas.
Yeah, share ideas. There's always a lot of inspiration to get from the talks there and the discussions. And this time it was in the beautiful town of Uppsala in Sweden, which is just outside of Stockholm, actually. I would really recommend to go.
Yeah.
For us, it was the first time.
Nice student city. They really do like...
Yeah, really vibrant. It's an old city, but really with a vibrant spirit. You can really feel it. And one of the talks that we found especially interesting was the talk by Mustafa Sharif.
Exactly.
You can see him in the upper right corner there. So we snapped a picture of the last screen and we're like, hey, Let's get this guy together. Because we thought this would be really...
After his talk, we were just like running into him and say, "Ah, listen, we're doing like this nice web talk. It would be a special honor if you can make it and just share your ideas with the Austrian community." And he said yes. So here we are.
So we're really honored to have him here. And maybe Mustafa, you can say a few words, just give a quick introduction. Who you are, what you do.
Sure. Again, thanks for the invitation. So I'm Mustafa Sharif, and as you read, urban planner and studio manager. So I studied architecture first, then I didn't like it, then I switched to urban planning because I like this, the bigger scale, and different things were related and not only focusing on material and functions and drawings. So I studied in Stockholm and also in Milano. Then I went back to Stockholm and started working as a consultant. And through the years, I worked with something very, very niche. It's like child-friendly city. And I will explain why it's important and how can we do it and so on.
All right, great. Maybe just one more question to start with. How exactly did you get into the topic of child-friendly cities? Because,
yeah,
I mean, yeah, from urban planning, I mean, usually you're thinking big things, and how did you get to that focus, really focusing on children and child-friendly places?
Very good question. When I graduate, I start working in a firm, and then suddenly my coworker, she came, she told me, my other coworker, she's sick, and I have a project in a school. Do you want to follow? It's with kids. And I say, with kids, why do we need to talk to kids? And she said, just follow me. And I went with her and I saw like, okay, we talk with kids and take their opinion. And then I went back to the office and started doing research about statistics, why it's important. And I found like, okay, it's so interesting because we have all these kids, they don't have voice and vote in everything happening. So somebody needs to be like ambassador and be their voice in these big complex projects. So that's how I came in. It was like just randomly because my other colleague were sick.
Yeah, that's great. That's always how things happen in life, right?
Yeah,
it's just a coincidence and then suddenly it clicks and
exactly. It's like I am a yes sayer. So as soon as I say yes, something open. So I'm very happy.
Great. And I know you've brought some cases,
yes,
some best practice examples, some cases you've worked with. Maybe we can jump right into your presentation and then
sure,
see what it's all about.
Yes, let's do it. So good morning again, and thanks for listening. I'm happy that you made it here, or if you're listening afterward in the, to the audio. So this will be about child-friendly places and cities, why it's important, and how can we do it. If we go back in the time and see how cities are made in the recent, say, 80, 70 years, much from what you see, this circle, like, we have the city center in the middle, then we take a car to where we sleep, our houses, then we take a car to where we work, and so on and so on. So it was much separated, car dependent, and a lot of focus on the functions and how it looks, but not so much about how we feel and how we as a human engage in this and so on. I show you this picture. This is from Malmo. Maybe this also look, you can see many of European cities, it looks the same. It's like built during modernism, highways in the middle, and a lot of like car dependence, and which create also later segregation, maybe criminality, maybe carbon dioxide and so on. So there are a lot of consequences when we did this modernism way of designing city. Here I show this is one of absolutely like low socio income level in Sweden, and just few meters you have this waterfront area, one of absolutely most expensive areas in Sweden. And you see like here highways segregating these cities and rising criminality, rising unsafety, and other stuff as well. This is also one typology of how we did housing in the past. We still live there. You can see a lot of focus on functions, form, material. Here we have very good parking. We have this 100 meter of attached housing, but we didn't think so much about how we feel, how our kids grow up, how our stress level, how does this area looks like when it's dark, and so on. That's why a lot of problem came from the modernism, and cities start to shift to something new because they want to solve problems. And a lot of cities start to work with this concept of human-centric city. Now it's very famous for being this 15-minute city. So instead of you take a car to your next function or destination, you can actually walk or bike, and it's not so far. It's, say, around 15 minutes bike or walk, and you have like access to your necessary function, daily function, like learning, working, market, park, healthcare, and so on and so on. So it brings functions closer to us, which means that we are cities and areas are more integrated instead of being segregated. Of course, Sweden don't have this like very official policy on being 15-minute city like Paris, but we were doing something similar to this, like human-centering, less car, more people. And my role in this ecosystem, as I mentioned, is this being the voice of kids in the big complex meetings when we do urban planning and design projects. And during the years, I interviewed and talked with more than 500 kids, different ages, and it's like became really passion, and I'm so happy that I'm working with this important aspect, because it's not so many of us urban planners or designers doing it. So I'm happy to spread the message, and again, thanks for the invitation here. So who is a child? What is a child? According to UNICEF, a child is any person under the age of 18. So here we have the category of children. From 0 to 18, we call it a child. And we should also keep in mind that in this, like from 0 to 18, as you know, children are different. Like a 3 years old child is not as 16. But what we say a child in the documents and so on. So we need also to pay attention that this, like the child category, is also tricky because we have so many different categories under it. And how many children do we have on planet Earth? If you see, this is the Earth, and around 30% of world's population are children. And if we take these 30% children, we can see 1 billion living in cities, and then the rest living in rural areas, villages, and so on. And the number of, as you know, the number of people moving to city increasing. That's why also like the number of children also increasing. So we have, say, 30% of children of world population are children, and 1 billion of them living in cities. Why cities are important? So why I work and I care about this, and why should we also like push for this? It's because according to the research, children grow and develop mostly outdoor than at home. And they develop both mentally and physically, mentally or cognitive, when they talk with other children, start to learn how to collaborate, to speak, learn about culture, to think, to play together, and to find solutions. This is mentally. And physically, you know, when they jump, run, walk, climb, and so on. All of these, of course, they get it at home, but mostly they get it from outdoors. So cities is like this, like a learning environment, development environment for kids, and it's very essential. So if you have a child friendly cities, we have a generation that feels good, can think and work and collaborate. If we don't, it's the opposite. One day I was shocked because we went to a kindergarten here in Sweden, and we saw the number, like children were a bit over height, like their weight, they were a bit more than the standard. And it caught my eyes. And I asked the teacher, why is these numbers? And she told me it's because the schoolyard is small, and the area is a lot of traffic, so they don't move. And by years, from they born until they were like 6 years old, this all affect how their physical development. And it's so sad, because imagine how much we can affect this. Research tells us what is good to create a child-friendly cities. We need like green places, clean places, network of places, safe, where children can move, can learn, can sense, and so on. So it's not like a lack of knowledge. Here's also a very good example from a book by the researcher Tim Gill, highly recommended. He divided like how we see child-friendly places to these four categories. Here you can see children's mobility, like how much children can move by their own without the need to their parents, and here how many activities they can do. So first, like is the cell, which means that a child is in one place, not so much to do, and cannot move. Usually it's happening in villa areas which is like far a bit from all other activities. Then we have this glass houses, and where children maybe have like different floors of here, you have some activities to play, sport or something, but it's located in one area and they cannot move so much. Wasteland, no cars, but unfortunately not so much to do for them. So, and then we have this child-friendly city, which is like a good balance between children can move without the need of their parents or adults, and then there are so many activities for them to move and develop. So this is like very, I think, good illustration of what is a good child-friendly place. The problem is mostly comes to how do we do it? It's not so much about knowledge and skills. We have a lot of very talented designers, communication experts, marketing experts, regional planners. We have these talents, and they love to work also with each other. So it's not a question of talents, not a question of knowledge. It's a question of a process. We from different organizations have different processes, and they look different with different colors. That fits to our business work and how we perform and make money and so on. But what we need to do is moving from this linear way of doing projects to this more co-creational process, is that instead of just getting a project, working with it, submitting, no, we need like to get the project first round, second round, third round, and then submit it. So this is what we lack, is how our process looks like. And as I mentioned, we get the project, we do the analysis, the research, background, and we see the area and so on and so on. And then we work on the proposal and then submit it. What we usually miss, and what we did before and when we design places, actually users, mostly we forget to talk with them and take their opinion, and a lot to do because of our process and budget and a mindset of working. But what pushed us to in Sweden to work with children is actually this thing. And you are looking to a convention or on the right of the child. And in Sweden, it became a law in 2020, which means that all the municipalities, government agencies, they need to consider this in their project. So what is this? This is an agreement between the United Nations country that the government will look into the best interest of children. Austria, of course, very active in this as well. And 92, and also Sweden were active, but then they made it alone in 2021 before COVID. So what is it about? These are 54 paragraphs that tells how we can, in our processes, include youth and children. I can take an example from this. You can also, actually, it's available. You can download it and read more about it. I think it's very good because a lot of these articles, you can implement it for adults as well. So example from this, paragraph number 3, best interest of the child. When we work with urban design, placemaking, and so on, we take this paragraph and see, okay, how in this project are we going to have the best interest for a child? Maybe we should place the parking or the garage far from the school. Maybe we should make the playground bigger. Maybe we should integrate accessible network to this, and so on. So we need to put children on the top. And here also it says life, survival, and development, which means that every project should serve and give this to children in that area, development, playground, school, and so on. So these cards, colorful cards, I think they are very good. Even if you don't work like with this kind of project, but it's nice to have a look to understand this part of planning and design. I can show an example. This is a very fresh project. We developed an area, or this huge public space here between school and buildings. And what we did is to have the children with us from the beginning. We did this walking tour, observe the place, taking notes, what is working, what not working, and why. And then we took also families separate, and we did also the same walk. And then we gather information. And then now it's being renovating. Maybe if you follow me on LinkedIn, this I will update pictures later when it's done. It's important to understand that when we talk about child-friendly places, it's not only about children. Of course, these are the target group, but it's a lot to do with their parents and caregivers, schools, parents, fathers, mothers, sisters, and like the adults in this game, because they have also other side of the coin. They are the one doing like I don't know, say the mobility part or the cleaning or the watching or the safety and so on. So we need also to collect this. Sometimes we see maybe the role of designer becoming more like as a facilitator, because we invite other users and they make decisions. It is actually not. In the end, we as practitioners, we have the responsibility because we know the rules, the criteria, we have experience, practical experience. So we have the responsibility. It's not like the children are the designers or the adults are the designers. They contribute with their view. And then it's our mission to put this together in the very good design. And that's why we need all these like three groups. So we should keep in mind that children, of course, it's for them, but they are not the designer because there are a lot of aspects that we need to cover as practitioners. This is another project where we actually work with children hands-on. Here it's like Sikla Gymnasium, it's the school. And then here a very big construction project. And the place start to be abandoned because the children, they don't want to come here and a lot of construction and dust and so on. So we say, how about we reclaim this public space again? We bring children and we start to cut and model and so on. And we end up with having a kind of this fence separate the construction from the public space and school. And also this fence is pixely. You can rotate this to get different colors. And suddenly this became a very popular place because a lot of children come here and do the letters of their football clubs every night and then they change it. So it became like this arena for showing off. But this, we did it together with them all the way up to the construction where only like adult could work there. This is another project. It's in the courtyards of a lot of rent housing. They were not using a space. It's very beautiful green, but people were not out there. So we invited the families and we talked with kids and with the parents and asked, so how can we place make this? How can we program this? What do you want? What brings you outdoor and give value? So it came a lot of proposals. One of them is this urban farming where children actually spend time outdoor, also meeting with their parents. So there's something like conversation starter, but also they work with hand and develop their knowledge and like mentally and physically as well. How do we find kids? We cannot just bring kids from the street and say, okay, we have a project, we need you. We actually go to schools when it's like a development. We go to the closest school and say, we work on this project. Can we meet children from this age to this age, from this gender to this gender, and so on. We go to these youth hubs when children usually after school play. And it's very important that we show respect and explain the project, the complex project, to them in a simple way so they understand their contribution, when, why, how, and when is the result. Because in the past, as designers, we just went to schools, took data from kids about their move, activities, feelings, and so on, without telling them that this will not be built tomorrow. And it creates a lot of disappointment and generation disappointment and so on. So now we work a lot with the storytelling that we need to be clear that this will not be happening tomorrow. We tell the timeline, how is the process complex, and also invite for pizza so they feel more like friendly. Because what we face is very difficult. Maybe this is you people in marketing and communication can help us with, is like the approach. Because families, they tell their kids, don't talk to a stranger and don't give all the information. And then suddenly we show up and say, hello, tell me how you, where you live, how you move. It's very difficult. So this part of storytelling and pedagogy is so important, especially in the beginning. And as you know, we love this technique and design and software programs design, but we're not so much about storytelling. So I think there is a good collaboration between us. Here's also a way of design. What you can see here is children love that to have something unprogrammed, that it's not clear if this is, if we should do it like this or like this. So we leave like a space for them to explore what is this and create their own games. And they love this shiny, colorful material instead of just like gray. This is what always they ask, and this is where, like, when we observe, if you see an area with like a gray or a black and white, and then you see colorful, they are on the colorful area. When we design, we usually divide the place to three different places. On stage, which means that here is the center. If you as a child wants to actually practice jump and play, this is for you. You are on stage. Just go for it and play. But as I told in the beginning, from 0 to 18, there are different children, different ages, different needs, and so on. So that's why we have something called offstage. It's maybe you as a child want to dance, want to play, but you don't want to be in the like spotlight, but you still want to be part of this. So this is offstage. And then we have backstage for children who actually just want to like sit, chill, maybe talk with their friends and not be active physically. This is also important because in the past we were designing places for only activities, but after we saw that we need actually to make a public space that serve different needs. So maybe children or youth, they don't need to sit in the metro station just to chill. They have a public space that serve their needs. This is a project. It's not my project, but I love to share it. Like I will share three projects more like internationally. And this is from Milano. They develop 50 different public spaces, new public spaces. Here's one example. They remove all the parking. They invite families who are living around and to design this public space. And as you see, we have all the elements like car-free, colorful, activities, greenery. And you can also see this is another example. I really recommend you to check this on internet because it's very like beautiful design, very basic, very light design, but brings a lot of value to the neighborhood. Here we have in Barcelona with children or child-friendly city, you work with different scales, with small scales, public space, schoolyard, but also with this strategical. This is one of strategical projects. They map all the schools and what is around the school. And this program is about turning the surrounding of a school to a public space. So no more cars, but more public space, more for families, for children, so they can be there during school time, after school time, and so on. So more space for people. Here in, from the Helsingborg city, if you have the chance to visit Copenhagen, you can take the train to Malmo city and also to Helsingborg city, beautiful city, and they made a very smart move. What did they do is that the budget, they invested in thematic playgrounds. This is became over a year. They didn't build all this during 1 year. So they invested in the thematic playgrounds and they placed it in different areas in the city, not only in the rich areas or not only in the city center. They really spread it. And why? I was wondering, like, why did they do that? It's because they wanted to break a segregation between different areas and then they want people to actually move in Helsingborg and explore the city. So what happened is that kindergarten schools, they went to like a trip to this area. And then after the school, the children tells their parents, we went to this dragon and princess playground. We need to go there. And it happened actually that people start to move and explore areas. I can tell you an example. It's a real example also, because I moved from Iraq because of the war to Sweden, to this city. And then we lived in the neighborhood, actually mostly from immigrants. And after years, when we start, we have this playground, the Dragon one. And I start to see that we have people coming from other cities, from other places of Helsingborg and being here. Suddenly the area was less segregated and it's open up and open up. So it's actually worked. And that's how you can also like play with the storytelling and marketing and design to serve a larger group than only like children. So in the end, as I mentioned, we have different projects and we have different processes. It looks different and that's very fine because we are ecosystem. Something important that we actually need to have in our processes is the user perspective. And in my case, is the to include the children and youth in this planning or design. of a place, and not only because it's important for their development mentally and physically, but also it's their right. I mentioned before we start this conversation that 30% of population are children. They don't have a vote. They don't have a voice in the voting. Nothing. They cannot decide anything about anything related to them. Everything related to them. So it's our duty as adults to give them something good, because this will pay back. We raise up a great generation. It also pays back to us as adults as well. Accessibility, mobility, green areas, public spaces, good schools. So it's a win-win. So this is the main takeaway from this presentation, is that look at your process and identify where in these many steps you can have the user perspective, children perspective, adults, businesses, and so on. And yes, in the end, I just want to show this. I have a podcast. It's called Urbanistica Podcast, or Cities for People Podcast. And now it's a fifth season. We have more than 500 episodes. And in this, I talk with people working with cities, child-friendly cities, placemaking, marketing agencies, and so on. And we have listeners from 146 countries. What I love from you is that please follow, listen, so you get more inspiration. But also important is that if you feel and think you have like an interesting project, or you want to talk about specific topic, please reach out to me. Because this podcast is not me talking. I mostly like interview experts, students, children, non-experts, to create this, like to inspire, maybe to collaborate, and so on. So the podcast is yours. Listen, and please write me when you feel this is the good moment. And in the end, I give a lifetime warranty, which means that if you have any question after this hour, or you have, I don't know, comment, project, anything, please just reach out to me and let's keep the conversation. And again, thanks a lot for inviting me here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
For sharing. Well, I hope you guys have a couple of questions. Feel just free to either ask them or post them in the chat. I hope that Markus is going to read out the questions for us in case we can't see them. Does anyone have a specific questions? Because otherwise we, of course, prepared some. So maybe if you want to raise your hand.
Maybe it's a quick addition. Also, first of all, thank you for this insight into your work and those wonderful examples. I mean, I found it really exciting to see also, like how you mentioned, these can be sometimes very small projects also. Like sometimes, I mean, when you hear words like, ooh, place development, and it all sounds very big and fancy, but yes, actually those smaller places, like you can have a backyard or like an empty area between houses. But those are worthy projects, and you can really make a difference in people's lives. And also, like you showed with the playgrounds from Helsingborg, you can actually, do something that at first look, maybe it seems very narrow. Oh, you're just doing playgrounds. But this can actually change the whole fabric of the city and have a much bigger impact, actually. And that's really inspiring to see, I think.
You know, some cities work with sign level. Like instead of having a sign level on adults, they just lower it down. So they give children more accessibility and make children actually move. It's very, as you mentioned, it's very like a small effort, but bigger impact, because then children can go out and use this network.
Mm-hmm. Like seeing all these best cases, are there, these places are just not, I mean, they are made by children or for children, but they are also serving other groups, no? I mean, I'm looking at the playgrounds in Helsingborg. I think it's also a touristic attraction, actually, if you have like these themes around.
Increase a lot of people coming now from Denmark or from the Sweden to visit to just to look at this and see how is the design, how is functioning, become it's became very big thing. Also thanks to like marketing of these areas, then a lot of people in the world know about this. So more people like taking the train to us and visiting Helsingborg.
Okay. And I know Mustafa, you also mentioned the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. Actually, if I can share one slide here, Markus. Because there's also from the UN or from UNICEF, the Child Friendly Cities Initiative, of course, which I know is very popular also in Austria. And they actually have a lot of material, I mean, also, which are very doable for smaller municipalities, I think. So that's also worth looking at if anybody out there in the audience is interested in getting some ideas. They have various brochures ready, which kind of give you a first idea how to approach these projects. Maybe we can use a few minutes also to show one of our projects where we've been working with actually a group of teenagers. Very timely. And I think also we had some learnings and some
some learnings we sure had. So our project is more a communication project. Like the main goal was to raise awareness of sustainable living in Korneuburg, one of the cities we are
working with.
We've
accompanied them all the way from their city brand a few years ago, and then
exactly. And now, we had a project together. It was like last year. So besides the Ishat of Korneuburg, like the city of Korneuburg, also the placemaking studio Raumposition took part as one of the project partners as well, and it was financed by the EU Leader program. So the main goal, we asked teenagers how they imagine like sustainable living in their cities, and they made like a self experiment. So this was like the bubble, and asking themselves, how can I live more sustainable? Like what specific action can I do? And also, how does the city of Korneuburg already support it? Because they already had some things in implementation. So the teenager formed small groups. And we had like a very clear process design, like how we wanted ideally to work out. So we started with a kickoff workshop. Then we had like a follow-up. After that, they were doing like their self-experiment. Besides that, we also did some interview, or they did some interviews within their peer, with friends and families, and also with school. And like their experience on the self-test was published on social media. We did a channel together with them, and after that we had like a final presentation. So this was the timeline. The teenagers, I told you, we were setting up a social media account for them, like an Instagram account, where they were posting more or less daily about their about the experience. They had like they did videos and on meat-free dinners, where how to shop sustainable. They went to the market and visited there. They did some baking sessions together where they were doing, what did they do, muffins, I think. So it was a really nice small project at first. And the whole process was also supported on the website. We have put a link on the right corner. Where we gave updates about the project, and also like you can find the survey there. They did. And besides that, it was also supported by the local media, or by the media of the city of Korneuburg. They also posted like on Instagram and on their website, and they also featured them in the newspaper, in a local newspaper. And yeah, so what did they reach? Talking of numbers, like within this month of their self-experience, they had like generated 24 posts. And reached out to more than 6,000 accounts, and also generated more than 2,500 views. And this was like just organic. So they just started and they ripped it actually. And besides that, we also had like coverage with the local media. And they also, the input was also generated to build up a folder, like this Nachhaltigkeitsfolder. Ah, you can see it. So we did a folder, how sustainable living is working in Korneuburg, where we also have like a map inside so that people in Korneuburg know, okay, if I want to do my sustainable shopping, I will go to this and there. If I do want to travel more sustainable, then I can use car sharing and stuff. And this was also kickoff for doing after that social media campaign with videos, which was distributed on Meta and TikTok as well, where we nearly reached 95,000 people, like way more people than actually live in Korneuburg, but it's it was like spread pretty well. Mm-hmm. So the impact was pretty high, not only in number, but also what the teenagers experienced themselves. For example, they changed their habits and they also made their families and friends changing their habits, which is like pretty good. And they also gained confidence in raising their voice. So looking back, what we learned was that consistent support is needed. Like we had like this super design process, but we could see that it is good to have like a fixed person, like an education, a teacher or a social worker who is helping the kids out to work on content, for example. What we also learned is that we should be more flexible over how to involve people, because this was like always, it was consistently changing. We also get to notice that kids or teenagers are just communicating differently than we do. So they are not responding to mails, of course. They are never going to call you back. But what worked out pretty good for us was doing conversation on WhatsApp. Actually, this was a great platform because they were responding. You could see if they read your message or not. So we ended up that WhatsApp was our main content room where we were distributing ideas. And what we also noticed is that the engagement of teenager is fluctuating, like during the whole process. Like if it's taking too long, then the motivation level is going to sink. So in order to do that, like in order to keep them like doing, it would have been maybe better to have more check-in meetings where you discuss where the problems are. And finally, timing matters. So we put the like the whole project was put at the last 2 months of the school year. So the teenagers were, of course, a bit stressed out with doing like, like learning
exams
and stuff. So it was hard for them to have, in the end, like a big presentation on their experiment. So we ended up to make that tiny. So we had just a tete-a-tete conversation with the major. But this was also pretty important for them because they actually had like someone listening to them and someone they could share their ideas and also like the experience with. And this was like the picture, the final picture after having the meeting with the mayor of Korneuburg. So this was it. Thank you very much. Yeah. And have a good day, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.